All right, let's dive into something you might not think is super exciting at first glance.
Oh, is this the Bible translation deep dive?
It is. But trust me, it's going to get way more interesting than you might think, especially with these excerpts you sent over from Dr. George Payton's lectures.
Yeah, Dr. Payton. He's great. It really is amazing how much we just kind of take for granted all the work that goes into making these ancient texts understandable to us. Like, we just open up a Bible and there it is.
Yeah, he goes deep on all the challenges, words, ideas, even just like units of measurement, stuff that just straight up doesn't exist in lots of modern languages.
Oh, yeah. It's like, where do you even start with that?
Well, he starts with names. I always just assumed they like translated those, but it's actually way more complicated.
It is. Most of the time, they're actually what's called transliterated. Not directly translated.
So instead of finding a word with the same meaning, they're trying to, like, match the sound as close as they can in the new language.
Exactly. You got it. Like, in Swahili, Jesus is Yesu. But even that can get kind of tricky because different languages, well, they have different sounds.
For sure. He gave the example of the Orma language. No V sound, so the Swahili word for war, which is vita, becomes fita.
Wow.
Can you imagine trying to do that with all the names in, like, the Old Testament?
Oh, man. My brain hurts just thinking about it.
Right. So it's definitely not just, like, a simple word-for-word swap, huh?
Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
It's more about capturing the essence of the original meaning, but making it understandable to a modern audience in their own language.
Yeah.
But sometimes just plopping down a name isn't enough. Sometimes you need what Dr. Payton calls a bridge.
A bridge? What do you mean?
Okay, so think of a name like Galilee. Is it a lake or is it a region? Adding a little phrase like the region of Galilee, it makes it super clear instantly.
I got it. So those bridges help you avoid ambiguity and make sure everyone's understanding the same thing.
Right, exactly.
He also talks about how that same idea applies to the way a place name can stand in for its people. Like in Matthew, where Jesus pronounces woes on Chorazin and Bethsaida.
Right. That's a good example. So understanding figures of speech is super important, like personification, where a thing or a place is treated like a person. You have to consider not just the literal words, but also what deeper meaning or figures of speech are going on behind them.
So you're not just translating words, you're translating like whole ideas and cultural concepts.
You got it. That's exactly what's going on.
Which brings us to another big challenge, ancient units of measurement. Imagine trying to translate, I don't know, a cubit or a shekel into a language where those things just don't exist.
That's got to be a real headache.
I'd say. So how do they even, like, approach that?
Well, it can get pretty creative. Dr. Payton says sometimes you get lucky. Like, with the Orma language, they already have a word, dunden, that pretty much lines up perfectly with a cubit.
Wow. So the perfect translation is just hiding there in plain sight sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. But a lot of times it takes more creativity. Another strategy he talks about is using, like, relatable equivalents.
Relatable equivalents. What's that?
So instead of converting an ancient currency, like the shekel, into modern dollars, which is kind of meaningless, you can use something like a day's wage.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Everyone understands what a day's wage is. Doesn't matter what inflation is or the current exchange rate.
Exactly. So it's all about finding that sweet spot between staying true to the original text, but also making it, like, accessible to the reader. You want to help them understand the meaning, not get lost in the technical stuff.
But even with all the creativity, sometimes you just need some extra help, right? What about footnotes?
Footnotes, glossaries, all those extra bits are so important. Dr. Payton calls them paratextual elements.
Huh?
They let the translator add more context without cluttering the main text.
Ah, that makes sense. So you could explain a tricky concept one time in a footnote and then just refer back to it whenever it pops up again.
Right, exactly. Imagine having to explain what a talent is every time it appears in the New Testament. You'd spend half the book just talking about ancient money.
Speaking of talents, Dr. Payton gives this crazy example from the parable of the unforgiving servant. The servant owes his master 10,000 talents. That's like an insane amount, even by today's standards.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. So a footnote there helps the reader understand just how big that debt is without interrupting the story.
Right. It's like giving them just enough info to get the context without overloading them with too much.
Exactly. But translating units of measurement, it's not always so straightforward. Dr. Payton tells this really interesting story about tackling the phrase a bow shot away from the story of Hagar and Ishmael in Genesis.
A bow shot away. How do you even translate that for, like, a culture that doesn't use bows and arrows?
Well, he and his team were working with the Orma people, and they came up with this really clever solution. They use the word taraku, which means step. They figured out about how far a bow shot would be and then translated it as a certain number of steps.
That's so cool. It's relatable and it makes perfect sense in that cultural context. It's like they're recreating the experience, but in terms the reader can understand.
Yeah, it's a great example of how there's no one-size-fits-all approach to Bible translation.
So what's the main goal then, if it's so complex?
Effective communication. We want to convey the meaning of the text as clearly as possible to that specific audience. And sometimes that means getting pretty creative, like with that bow shot example.
Dr. Payton really stresses that it's not just about the literal words, but also the cultural context, the figures of speech, all that implicit stuff that a modern reader might not get. It's like painting a whole picture for them.
You got it. You have to think about what the original audience would have understood and then find ways to bridge that gap for a modern audience. But at the same time, you don't want to overwhelm them with too much info.
It's finding that balance. Keep them engaged and learning, but not bogged down in all the details.
Yeah, a delicate balance for sure. But when it's done well, translation can be this super powerful tool to understand and appreciate these ancient texts.
It really makes you appreciate the thought and effort that goes into a translation.
It really is like solving a giant puzzle.
Yeah.
Finding that perfect way to say these ancient ideas in a language that people today will connect with.
Yeah, and it's not just about finding the right words either.
Right, you got to understand all the cultural baggage that comes along with those words. Like Dr. Payton talks about how the concept of time itself can be totally different in different cultures.
Oh, right. He mentioned how the Orma people, being pastoralists, didn't really have the same need for precise timekeeping, not like people in a city would.
Exactly. Their lives revolved around the natural world, sunrise, sunset, the seasons, all that. So how do you translate something like a Sabbath day's journey in that kind of context?
He said they ended up using taraku again, but this time it was to indicate the number of steps a person could reasonably take in a day. It's wild how one word can mean so many different things depending on the context.
It really shows how fluid language is, how much the meaning is tied to culture. Translators have to be so sensitive to those nuances, almost like anthropologists studying how language is used in real life.
Yeah, it's a huge responsibility shaping how people understand these sacred texts.
Absolutely. And that's why it's crucial to have skilled translators, people who aren't just fluent in both languages, but also deeply understand the cultures they represent.
They're like cultural ambassadors, building bridges between the past and present.
Connecting ancient wisdom with modern understanding. It's more than a technical skill. It's like an art form.
It's almost like a musician, you know, finding the right notes to make you feel a certain emotion or convey a specific meaning.
Exactly. And just like music, a good translation can move you, inspire you, even challenge you to see the world in a different way.
It can also open up these new possibilities for conversation between different cultures and faiths.
Like those stone water pots from the Gospel of John, turning ordinary water into something extraordinary.
That's a great way to put it. Each translation is like its own vessel, offering a new way to experience all the richness of those ancient texts.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Bible translation, what stands out to you the most?
I think for me, it's realizing that every translation is a human creation, shaped by the choices and perspectives of the translator.
So there's no such thing as a single, perfect translation.
Yeah, each one is just a different lens, highlighting certain aspects, maybe leaving others in the shadows.
So it's up to us as readers to really think critically about the translations we're reading, to understand their limitations.
And to appreciate all the artistry and work that went into creating them.
And hey, maybe even be inspired to learn more about the languages and cultures that shaped how we understand these texts.
Who knows? Maybe this will even inspire some of our listeners to, pick up a new translation or even try to learn a biblical language themselves.
Yeah. Imagine being able to read those words in their original form, like hearing the echoes of voices from centuries ago.
That would be amazing. It really is, like Dr. Payton said, language is a window into different cultures and ways of thinking.
And the more windows we open, the more the richer and more vibrant our understanding of the world becomes, right?
Exactly. So the next time you open a Bible, just take a second to think about the journey those words have taken to get to you. All the decisions, all those creative solutions that have shaped their meaning.
And remember, the journey doesn't end there. It continues with every reader, with each new interpretation, with each new encounter with these timeless texts.
What a great thought to end on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Bible translation.
The pleasure's all mine. Until next time, happy reading.